Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's talk nerdy things like comic books and superheroes. Oh yeah, with some nerdy peeps, writers and cartoonists and so much more. Oh yeah, stick around and have some fun with the lovely and adorable Evil One.
Hello, my babies. Welcome to Titular Characters. As always, I am your cute and adorable host, Eva Webb, and today, for our 65th issue, we're featuring Jay Fabre. Jay likes to bring humor to her art and storytelling, and has a dynamic, fresh, and expressive art style. She has worked professionally as a flash artist for various social gaming studios, as well as a development artist for companies such as Disney and Warner Brothers. Her love for comics has also led her to working on various projects with Valiant Comics. Most recently, Jay has been working for James Patterson's book line for kids, Jimmy, on the Max Einstein series. In her free time, she enjoys watching movies, listening to true crime podcasts, and birding. And today, we're going to talk to her about comics, but in particular, her noir true crime webcomic, The Pale. It's a real gem, and I can't wait to share this interview with you. Hey, Jay. So I understand you have this crime fiction webcomic that is truly unique, and I'm excited to hear about it. What's it about?
Sure. It's a webcomic that my husband and I co-write together on. And it's about a face-blind FBI agent who is tracking down a killer in small-town Arizona. So we get a lot of, it feels like Twin Peaks and Fargo and a little bit of True Detective. So it's very character driven. There's a lot of interpersonal drama that's going on alongside trying to solve the mystery. So
that sounds absolutely amazing. So can I ask you about your origin story?
My origin story. Yeah. I don't know how interesting that is, but I think like every other artist, like I started drawing when I was really small. I was that kid who can draw in elementary school. I remember being in class one day drawing, and suddenly I felt all the eyes were looking at me in the room, and everyone was looking at me, and I had no idea why. And I asked someone what that was about, and they said, well, they're talking about like redoing a mascot or a poster for the school or something. And the teacher said, well, who's going to draw it? And they all looked at me. So me and drawing and me and storytelling have kind of, it's always been there. I didn't know it was comics, but I drew a picture and the description of what's going to happen, like world building, was very fun. And as I got older, I thought, oh, I want to be in animation because, you know, tell stories, whatever. That's what I was consuming. And the older I got, and after school and being in the industry for a while as a 2D artist for online gaming, mobile games, I realized that comics were where my like passion was. And I just loved the medium. I was introduced to it in 2008 and went to the library and borrowed a lot of great books and got started on really, really good comics. And then the comic, you know, bug bit me, and now here I am with my first comic. The Pale is my first comic.
You know, it's interesting to see a Webtoons comic that's actually a real collaboration. So I was wondering, where do good collaborations come from, and how do you make them work?
I think good collaborations come from seeing what the other person expects from the story. My husband and I were working so much better now, but in the beginning we clashed like all the time. And it was, I think, discovering your voice, what you like to see in media, and trying to get your partner to see that too. You know, I remember the first script that he wrote up, he was very nervous to show me. It took forever for me to see it. And within the first page, first panel, I knew it wasn't going to work. And like, I had to wait for the very end of reviewing it and him reading about it to say, I don't think that's going to work. And I think having patience, coming to an understanding, seeing where the other person's coming from, and taking their ideas, you know, it's a lot of give and take. A lot of The Pale started off as my idea, but he wanted to help. So a lot of his ideas, like if he didn't come up with them, like we would not have as strong of a cast and story. So it's collaboration is communication, not being afraid to say you don't like it or what you think could work, and patience. I think that's what good collaboration is, especially if you're married to them. Like, we have to make up, because after a fight, you know, about the story, we still got to eat dinner together. So yeah,
it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So why choose Webtoons as a platform? What does it do for you?
Webtoons? Well, I'm on a lot of, well, not a lot of platforms. I have a website on Comic Fury, and you could, it's kind of an old school webcomic site. You could make it look how you want it to be. But as far as Webtoon is concerned, Webtoon has the biggest audience for comics, especially webcomics. And that's where your audience is. That's where people who might be interested in what you're writing or creating will go to, because it's a great platform that you have easy access to, you know, thousands of comics. And I'm sure that if you're a creator and you put your comic out there, someone somewhere is going to find you and like it and will stick with you.
So as a writer, how involved is your planning? Are you one of those people that starts with a really detailed plan and orchestrates it perfectly every time? Or do you start writing and just keep going into the blue, I guess they say?
We don't have everything planned, which is not the thing you want to hear with a murder mystery, because, you know, you should know, like, how everything plays out. But we knew who our killer is. We know his motivations. We know the victims, why they're being chosen. And we know the motivations and the secrets behind the characters, the cast that we have. And I would say that we also, that we know where we want to have major plot points happen. We always try to make sure that every issue, every chapter that we put out is constantly moving the story forward, whether it's with the mystery or whether it's character development. And we know what we want to get to, and then we try to find our way there. Like, what makes sense from point A to point B, to point C, you know? Oh, we have to figure out B. What happens if we don't do B? We do something else, you know, and keep pushing that goal, that plot point back a little bit, and trying to get all the things that we want these characters to convey and do on the page. So I've heard that we plant the seeds pretty well in our comic. So I like to think, I've heard the term like the gardener or something like that. So we plant it and see what happens. But we kind of control a little bit what happens. We let the characters kind of help decide what they want to do. And yeah, I think that's it.
That is super exciting. So is the whole book in black and white?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different. A lot of comics are in color. So I like to think that we kind of stand out because we're doing black and white.
I just love what it does for the story and how unique it is. It's not something you usually see in a digital-only book.
Oh, there's a few out there. Well, Centralia 2050 is a sci-fi manga-inspired webcomic, and she started out black and white, but now she's going to color. So, but her color work looks great. She's working with a colorist, and they're a great pair. I think starting out black and white is great. And when you go to print, it definitely helps with your cost, like keeping costs down.
Nice. So is planning for print a big part of the equation?
Oh yeah, totally. It's we want to feel the comic. I'm a 100% digital artist, and I can't imagine what would happen if I lost my files. You know, if it gets corrupted, it's gone, you know, forever. And that happened to me. With the first chapter, like my hard drive crashed, and for some reason I had like this eerie calm about it. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I was kind of shocked, but we got it all back. We had to pay someone to like recover as much as they can from my hard drive. So we always go about that. Our scripts are planned for print. But I think how we do plan for print translates very well into webcomic form. Like ending the last panel on the page, you want to continue on. You want to do that page flip. So that's kind of our philosophy on the webcomic to print method, I guess.
So can I just tell you that I love the slick production of this particular book? It really just pulls you in. It's produced so well. It's very clean. It's very professional looking.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And it's funny because I'm redoing the first story arc. Like redoing the art specifically for the first two chapters to match later chapters in my visual storytelling sensibilities. And it's going to look great. Like, I'm really excited for when we remaster and reprint the new pages. And
I actually think This part is extremely interesting because, you know, you're completely redoing work. Is that something that you sell your audience on as a feature, or do you just sort of quietly sneak it in?
Oh, I definitely, like, in the beginning, like, you could kind of see the art shift. Chapter 3, I think, is when I started really feeling comfortable with the characters and my panel layouts, etc. But as far as, like, telling fans, like, oh, I'm redoing the first two chapters, I'm totally, like, blasting that on social media. Like, I share it on Twitter all the time, Facebook, the Facebook page, Instagram. I love seeing what I've learned since posting, I think, about 6 years ago. So I think it's a very fun update, and I think fans of the comic are excited to see the changes because it looks pretty cool. I don't want to toot my own horn, but it looks pretty awesome. I'm like blown away. I'm like, wow, cool. You know, so.
This is so neat. Yeah. Just in general, I think it's really refreshing to see comics that are sort of real world based as opposed to fantasy oriented. Yeah. I feel like fantasy is just sort of everywhere, especially in web comics. I just think it's really different and really exciting to see.
Oh, that's great to hear. Because sometimes I wonder, is it too real? You know, like we're dealing with a lot of sensitive ideas. You know, like if you haven't read the comic takes place on a border town of the Navajo Reservation. And the victim is a young Navajo woman, and a lot of unsolved missing persons and homicides happen within Native land. It's one of probably the highest, statistically speaking, of a population that goes unsolved. And it's because of the kind of the Wild West nature of their sovereign land versus, you know, the rest of the states. And I wonder if having to deal with real life tragedies like that and police work as we show it is interesting enough, because I know a lot of people, you know, consume media as an escape, and ours does have like fun, fantastic elements in it, but it's also, we try to be aware and sensitive to that this is really happening. These things do happen. So
this one's actually been running for a little while. How many seasons are you into now?
I finished the art for chapter 9. Chapter 10 is written. My husband is working on chapter 11 right now. So I'm kind of taking a break so I could revamp the art for chapters 1 through 6. But we have a pretty good buffer. You know, I like that I don't have to worry about posting it on time every Tuesday. It's already scheduled. It's out there. And I could just worry about, you know, other things I need to deal with.
So Is the experience of creating a comic maybe different than you thought it would be when you first started?
Yeah, it is. I didn't want to do a web comic. I don't know how I was going to do a comic, but for me, I had this idea that if you weren't published through, you know, a publisher, someone established, like Image or Boom or Scholastic, whatever, that it isn't real comics. You're not really telling a story. You're an imposter, you know, that type of thing. But I really wanted to get the story out there. So as soon as I had some pages, like I had maybe 5 pages, I remember thinking, well, a webcomic, you know, people read webcomics. And I posted it on Tapas, Tapastic, what it was first called in 2015. And then I started getting into the culture of webcomics. And I just, like, I fell in love with it. Now I'm like, you know, webcomics is where all the experimentation and the freedom of playing with something for as long as you want happens. And I learned a lot about, I think, production and keeping a schedule because of webcomics. You know, you have to be ahead of the game, create that buffer, create as many pages as you can, so you're not scrambling at the last minute to post, you know, when you say you're going to post. So there's a lot of accountability, I think, with webcomic creators. And it shows that you're dedicated and, like, serious about what you're doing. Like, you care, you know, it's this, your baby that you're trying to share with the world. And I think through webcomics, it's like a wonderful thing.
So I think it's interesting that your book is both geared towards print, which you're planning, as well as being a full web native comic series. Are there challenges that you run into there, trying to balance both of them?
For sure. I definitely think so. I think if you make a webcomic, you really have to consider, will this go to print? Because a lot of pre-production needs to be established. What is your DPI? You know, I've heard stories of people, they make their comic in 150 DPI
They
decide to go to print and they have to redraw it, you know, cause you know, the minimum is at least 300. Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that's something that you have to decide right out the door. Like, how are you going to do this? And this kind of goes back to the last question you said about production and creating, you know, producing the comic. The first chapter I had, when I look back at the files, it is a mess. You know, like, I don't know what I was doing. Like, there's layers everywhere. They could be combined better. And the size of paper I was working on the computer, it was 11 by 17 at 600 DPI. And what I've learned is you don't need to make it, you know, 11 by 17. That's something that kind of was like a legacy idea that comes from doing comics traditionally. You know, people like to make the art really big so it could scale down properly. But when you're doing digital, you could do it right to scale. You know, like I do, it's standard comic size, 6 point, whatever it is, 8 by 10 something. And I do it at 600 DPI. And when I go to print, I change it to 300 and it prints just fine, you know, and it saves a lot of space on the computer. That's something I did not I would not have known unless I planned for it, you know. I knew I was going to print, but setting up my files from the very beginning to be easier to post online as well as to print was something it took me maybe two chapters to figure out and learn.
So earlier we were talking about world building and some of the specifics there, at least as it revolves around situations and characters. But where do your characters find their voices?
I think I know our characters are definitely, it's playing on tropes that we recognize. Like we have the sheriff, we have the FBI agent, and already that creates an idea of, oh, they're already kind of against each other, because that's kind of what we've seen in media. And taking those archetypes and working out the backstory for them, like the sheriff character, he's one of the major things in the story at the very beginning is he's turning 40. So he's 40 years old. He's in this tiny, like, podunk town. He's not married. He's not currently seeing anyone. I have this great shot of him being alone in his trailer. And a lot of the voice is like, how does he go about the world? Like, how does he talk to people? And we definitely have him speak differently to different people. Like, you see him more comfortable and at ease with his deputy, his female deputy, the youngest one at the department. And then you see him being kind of reserved and standoffish with the FBI agent. And he, in his office, like, not only is, like, voice what they're saying, but also the background, like, literally the background. Like, what do you see in his office? What do you see in his house? So his office has a mix of, like, Western art, Native American art. And he also has, like, Japanese stuff. He has a little bonsai tree. He has some swords, and he has some swords in his house. So that kind of plays into it. Next week, actually, we post a nice thing next week about it. And I think the voice of the character comes through how you see them interact, how they react to events, and seeing how they keep themselves, like what their home life is like. The sheriff is very tidy, you know, his house isn't a mess. So it's, I think that tells a lot about the voice or the who the character is. And I think all those play a part in it.
So do you have a thought on representation and inclusion as it relates to the work you create?
This is a big thing for us, since it's because the town is in a kind of real location. Like, we made up the town, but the area that it's in is supposed to reflect northern Arizona and a little bit south of, I think, Utah. And we have a mixture of a lot of white people there. The sheriff is white. Most of his staff is white, but his the operator, the secretary, is Hispanic. And we wanted to include these different ethnicities, Navajo, Hispanic, in there, because when you have just like a plain cast of just like, you know, white people, it doesn't feel real. When I go outside, I see a whole bunch of different races, faces, languages. And for our town, when we went to Arizona, we saw a lot of Hispanic people. We saw Navajos. So we wanted to bring that in and try to reflect how those characters would interact with the other characters. And we try to go about it in a true to life type of scenario. Like Luca, the secretary at the sheriff's department, like she, when she's talking, you kind of hear a little bit of an accent, and we try to drop in the little Spanish that we know with as she's talking to people. And we have one of the deputies who actually is fluent in Spanish, and he's talking to her in Spanish. And we try to make it, we do as much research as we can to make sure we're treating someone that feels real, that you've interacted with, paying respect to, being sensitive to, like, this is their culture, this is what they do, how they say things, how they go about it. And we kind of view it as, we're not experts in that, but we want to include them because they exist. They're real. They're here in the real world. And we think it makes the world that much more tangible. Like, it, you feel like you could be there. And we try to make sure that the diversity isn't like, it doesn't feel forced. That's one of the big things. We try to make sure that it feels like this is just life as normal, and it feels natural to the reader.
So how do you keep a story exciting and fresh and interesting as you go?
I think it's playing against those archetypes. People, like, we have our FBI agent, and I think one of the things that he has besides face blindness is that he's a super polyglot. He could speak multiple languages. And we had a part where he's talking to the deputy in the diner, and he notices that she's reading Twilight, and he's like, oh, so, like, I know these characters, whatever. And she's surprised that he knows it. And she says, like, how do you know the characters? And he's like, well, I've read the book several times and translated it in several languages. And he drops, like, he's translated it in Spanish, Norwegian. I don't know what else he said, Russian, I think. And a lot of comments, and this is the thing I like about webcomics, like, the comment section is great feedback, instant feedback. And a lot of people are like, wow, I did not see that coming. I'm very surprised. So I think in keeping things fresh, it's knowing those little tidbits of your character that you want to share and how you share it. Our comic is best described as a slow burn. But it's addicting. So the interaction between the characters are very important. So what can we do as writers, creators, to make sure that whenever we say something, whenever there is a moment between two characters, that you're building up the character, their backstory, their background, their arc, but also it has to play into the story. Like, it's important. You're not just seeing this, you know, for the heck of it. There's a reason you're seeing this. And I think because we kind of limit ourselves to that idea, and because it's a murder mystery, we have to make sure that every scene that we do, it counts. And I think that's how you keep things fresh and entertaining. People want to come back because we're not doing filler. We're just, you know, moving forward because we need to.
So do you still have the time to read comics?
Honestly, no. When you're drawing the comic, like you don't have time to read. Like my husband, he's constantly trying to get me to read this manga that I did start, but I just haven't had a chance to pick it up because I feel so guilty. I'm like, well, I got my comic I gotta do. This comic is awesome to read. Yeah. But now I'm like, you know, trying to get the ball rolling with ours. So I don't read as many comics as I used to. I have fallen way behind on a lot of web comics. I kind of like the idea of reading web comics on a week-to-week basis because it's kind of like a mini episode, you know, a weekly show. I don't have to binge it like this manga that's sitting right here. So I don't read as much as I like, but I try to whenever I can.
When was the last time a comic made you cry?
I remember reading The Sixth Gun by Cullen Bunn and Brian Hitch? No, not Hitch. Oh my God, I'm forgetting the artist's name. But it was released through Omni, and that story, like, it was so addicting. I remember reading it during the holidays, I think 2014, 2015, and I couldn't put it down. I was so invested in the characters, and at the end, I don't want to spoil it, but it was really emotional. Like the pacing of the pages, the use of just silence, like, was deafening almost. Like you felt the impact of the event that happened at the end. And like I was kind of sad, you know, like that this happened, but also the comic left on a kind of on a note of hope. And yeah, so I think that was kind of like the last time when I was like emotional from a comic. It was maybe 2015 with The Sixth Gun.
So is there anyone that stands out in your mind as either the most underrated or most inspiring creator in comics?
I don't really know about underrated. Maybe because I go about things like, if I like it, I like it. That's pretty cool. They're pretty high in my book. So almost every creator that I'm into is inspiring. So the biggest creator that I always kind of fall back to saying that was inspiring, even before the show came out, is Jeff Lemire. Right now, I think one of his comics is Sweet Tooth, and I think another one is going to be adapted into a show. I'm not sure which, but I love hearing his origin story, and I love hearing about how he started off and making comics, you know, that he wanted to tell, one man show, and how he gained momentum, notoriety. People noticed him because he invested time in a story that he wanted to tell and he loved, you know, with his original IP, his OCs. And I think seeing how he how he treats those characters and those stories and how much content he's put out is super inspiring to me. So when I think of like, who do I want to be in comics? I can only hope to be like Jeff Lemire.
That is awesome. Well, Jay, it looks like we're up against the end of the show. Are you ready for the fun part?
This was all fun. I don't know what the fun part is, but yeah, sure. What's the fun part?
Awesome. We'll start with an easy one. What's your favorite food?
I like burritos. I can eat, I think, burritos every day. I love burritos.
Do you know if you're a cat or a dog person?
Okay, that's really hard because I love cats and I had cats for all my life. But I have these two wonderful dogs, my fur babies, and I love them to bits. And I think I'm a former cat person because I just love my dogs so much, and I love how humans evolved with dogs. I think that's a special relationship, and yeah, can't ignore that one.
Yeah, that's neat. Mm. So what's the best swear word?
Fuck. Definitely.
Nice.
I just love that you could use that for anything. So yeah, fuck.
So where do you find joy?
It's going to sound like, ooh, that's so artist of you, but I find joy in like creating. It's hard for me to stop working on my passion project. Like I forget to eat. That's not healthy. Don't do that. But I forget to eat and all these things because I'm just so invested in bringing this story to life and seeing the characters come alive. So art definitely brings me joy.
That's pretty awesome. So what inspires you?
Nature. Nature inspires me, and a good story, whether that's through a book, comic, TV show, movie, real life events like people overcoming adversity, or a gymnast who, you know, has beat the odds. I think I like stories of like hope and the underdog overcoming things. So those things inspire me.
It's been a crazy day. You've been fighting Thanos ever since 5 a.m. He's going to snap his fingers and wipe out all of humanity. You fight him, and you're losing. He's a really hard person to fight with. So, he's right there. You think it's the end. He's about to snap his fingers and wipe out half of all life in the universe. But then, suddenly, he has a heart attack and dies. Ooh. You are now in possession of the Infinity Gauntlet. You can do anything you want to warp or change reality with it. What do you do?
Oh my god. I would snap my fingers and clean up the ocean, get rid of the pollution in the ocean and in the environment, and I think make... yeah, I think that's the first thing I'll do. clean up the ocean, clean up the environment, and maybe bring back the white rhino in a good, steady population somewhere. Get the earth back together.
So what's next for the talented Jay Fabre?
On a personal note, I'm going to be a first-time mom in November. So,
oh, my God. Congratulations.
Thank you. My husband and I are looking forward to that. Maybe I could teach the baby to be my flatter on the comic and help me out. But I think right now, really finishing the pail is like super important to me. Redoing the arc and putting out some Kickstarters. I definitely see in my future, and just trying to make more stories. I want to get this thing done and maybe work on something else or find another story to work in tandem or at the same time as the pail. But yeah, just keep creating, because I've done corporate art jobs and I hate it. I love the freedom of being able to say no to a client, potential client, or accepting a gig. I definitely want to make my art for me and share it with others, and hopefully that inspires other people to do the art that only they can do.
Well, Jay, I wanted to take a second to thank you for making the time to pop on and talk to me on my humble little podcast.
Oh, thank you, Eva. I saw the call and I was like, wow, I could definitely talk.
Well, this was awesome. Where can people find you online?
People can find me on Twitter at WootJ. That's WOOTJAY. And they could find us, the comic, at thepalecomic.com. And they could find my art at jfabray.com. That's J-A-Y. F is in Frank, A is in Apple, B is in Boy, A is in Apple, RES.com.
And now it's time to close the show. Imagine it. The lights beginning to come on in an empty theater. People starting to get up from their seats. The smell of popcorn crushed on the floor. And the thought runs through your head that Titular Characters is awesome and you want to support it. Fear not, my friends, there are tons of ways to do it. You can follow Eva at Eva is Adorable on Twitter. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Castbox, or Podcast Addict. And if you're feeling super generous, you can leave some dough at buymeacoffee.com/EvaIsAdorable. There, you can contribute as little as a dollar. And every bit goes towards paying for production and hosting of this show. How cool is that? Titular Characters is a show about the things we love. It is produced and hosted by the adorable Eva Webb. Opening theme by Antonia Marquis. Closing theme by Mikey Flash of Speed Force Music. The dreamy announcer guy who reads the credits is Donnie Underwood. That's me. Join us next time for another death-defying adventure in cyberspace. See you then!